Coast and Norway's podcast number 17 just happened. If you want to hear more podcasts, go to the podcast page at coastandnorways.com. There's a new blog up, a geological odyssey through Mississippi, an analysis of the Coen brothers' O Brother, Where Art Thou? That I just put up this week, so you can go and check that out there. Social media, Twitter, Coastal Noise, or me. And I'm also on Facebook, so you can join on those and keep up with everything that we're putting out. So I'll keep this short, just get right into it. Coastal Noise Podcast 17, here it is. I'm sorry, testing, could you mic check that one more time?
Testing. I don't want to lie to you. Can everybody hear me?
So I heard there's a big dragon in the new Hobbit movie.
What about a dragon?
Big dragon in the new Hobbit movie.
There's a big dragon in my pants.
Everybody knows that.
That's why we're here.
Why, what's up with the Hobbit movie?
You should turn up my microphone, because I talk really low.
Okay.
Blah, 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 blah. Good.
Well, apparently of the new series, the very newest one, the second one of the second three is a lot better than the first one, apparently. I haven't seen it, so we shouldn't really be talking about it, I guess. Look at my dad. Driving your car.
Okay. This is actually, good thing right now what you're doing, because sometimes in the podcast we do beer clubs where we all get different imported beers, maybe sometimes local stuff, Lazy Magnolia or what's another one, I'm forgetting, it's been a while since we've done it. Lazy Magnolia,
Abita, it's sort Abita. Of pretty local.
Abita,
the best.
Yeah, Anthony, I know you're like a diehard, not diehard, but like I usually see you drink a lot of Abita.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Or amber is the other, the other flavors, not so much.
Abita amber.
Abita amber is definitely number one.
Nice. But you can tell us, this could be our first liquor rundown. This, you're drinking Tito's, correct?
Yeah, trying out some new vodka. It's Tito's. It says, the bottle says it's out of Austin, mm-hmm. Texas. So that makes it extra cool points right there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of cool people that live there, so I want to relate to them.
I was
going to
ask if you've been to Austin.
Been to Austin several times. It is a great town, great city.
You just go there to visit friends or to ride or what?
Both. To visit friends that live there. It's literally the center of the BMX world. Worldwide, Austin is the capital of BMX.
So really?
It's pretty, it's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Good climate, lots of pretty girls. Really good atmosphere. It's almost like Cali on the, or San Fran. I've never been to San Fran, but San Fran on the in Texas. Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. I debate a lot between Colorado and Austin, Texas. Austin specifically. Like, anywhere in Colorado would probably be cool. But the thing about Austin...
It would
Austin,
be cool. In fact, it'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Really cold.
Yeah, but it's... I don't know. It doesn't bug me. Like, I've never been there when it's December or February around this time, but I still think, I don't know, I think I'd be prepared. I think I would enjoy it. It'd be nice cold, if there is such a thing. But, I mean, when you grow up in a climate like this down here on the coast, I'm sure it can be super hard to adjust to it.
Yeah, it's a little jarring. You go up north and get in some snow, it's below 30 degrees, you start freaking out.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the collective consciousness of a location as well. Like, if you live your whole life on the coast and you're used to this kind of temperature and everybody else is as well, then everybody kind of reinforces the idea that any temperature beyond a certain...
Yeah, it's a wreckiness. It's
exactly,
not who we are. We don't like it.
Exactly. So that in itself probably makes you a lot colder than anything else. Whereas if you lived in Colorado, the collective social perception of it is like, oh, this is nice and... This is
people
barren.
Go outside there, taking the shirts off. It's 20 degrees outside. Ah, you pussies are
exactly.
going for it.
Exactly. But Austin's, I mean, it still has that southern vibe to it, and it is a really cool place. It's just the funny thing about Austin is it's surrounded by the rest of Texas, as the joke goes.
Yeah.
But actually, I think Texas is kind of cool. Texas is like the land of the last cowboys, in a way, you know?
I could live in Texas, for sure. I mean, that's a good spot.
And anywhere in particular? Like, besides?
It'd be Austin or San Antonio, for sure. San Antonio's a real pretty rad place.
Yeah.
Houston is the bottom of the list, but I have a lot of good friends there, and there's a lot of stuff to ride there. But in general, doesn't carry that Texas culture the same way that Austin or San Antonio does.
Right. Houston's traffic's the worst. I don't think I could live in Houston just because I've experienced their traffic just going through it. And after that, I was just like middle finger to Houston. I was like, never going to happen.
Yeah, they've been working on the interstate system there for about 25 years straight. As long as I can remember, there's been heavy traffic because of construction. Yeah, it's been ridiculous. It's like an ongoing project for tons of years.
Anthony, would you be willing to look up some facts about the Houston traffic interstate system?
Sure.
I'm just curious. If y'all set y'all's mic down, you can just throw the switch so that way it's not all like psh, 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 back and forth. Okay. Yeah, that's the one. Right on. So did you say you ride in Houston too, or?
Yeah, I've ridden in Houston quite a bit. In fact, they just had a big event there that I missed. It was the I forget what it's called. It was a Red Bull Jam. It was an urban event where they mixed dirt jumping and big jumps into an urban environment and just had a kind of a big jam there. A lot of big name pros from all around, mostly sponsored by Red Bull, showed up. So
they
definitely have a scene there, and there's definitely some pretty rad facilities there to ride.
Who are the most exciting people coming up in the BMX world?
Most exciting people on the come up? Mm-hmm.
Because I like, my only knowledge of such things is usually straight from watching X Games, but I haven't really like caught it in the last 2 years or so. So I'm just kind of curious.
The X Games is pretty locked down. I mean, you watch the X Games, you're watching the top 20 guys over and over. You know, it's mm-hmm. those guys who have the biggest sponsors, who have the most money to get in that contest. It's invite only. You can't qualify for it. So that's not the best judge of new upcoming talent, for sure. But there's quite a few kids, lots of kids going through Woodward Camp right now, acquiring skills from the more veteran pros and applying those. One that comes to mind is nothing comes to mind. I'm drawing a blank. I know no BMXers right now.
That's all right. Nobody?
I'm just drawing a blank right now. I have no thoughts in my head for some reason.
Have you ever snowboarded before? I know you BMX. Did you ever get into skateboard, or either of you, Anthony or Doug? Have y'all ever?
I think both of us probably can skateboard, like down the road, but I've never. I'm not into skateboarding.
Okay. I have like 1 month skateboarding experience because my arm was broken. So I was like, oh, I can't hold handlebars. So I guess I skateboard now. And then my arm healed, and that was the end of that.
Okay. What about snowboarding?
Never. I've actually seen snow maybe a couple times in my life, so snowboarding's definitely on the outs.
Yeah.
I have a few friends up in St. Louis, believe it or not, St. Louis, Missouri. They snowboard pretty often.
My brother's up in New York right now. He just went up there for like a couple days just to go snowboarding. And I've went recently. It's pretty fun. But it's definitely an extreme sport to get into. Snowboarding is difficult. I was on that for maybe 2 minutes, and then I was like, no way.
So you think snowboarding is more difficult than skiing?
I don't know. It'd be hard for me to pass judgment on it because, like I said, I was on it for 2 minutes, had a bad experience getting out of the driveway, and then I abandoned it. And then I got on the skis and just started picking up that. And so then after that, I never got a chance to do the snowboarding thing again. So I don't know. It'd be hard for me to say, really, whether, because I didn't really give it a proper chance, I feel like. So, but I might have been able to hop back on and make a better run out of it.
Coastal Boys talking about snowboarding.
Hey.
Don't have too much information there.
Yeah. I actually know a few people who, you know, make trips out to Colorado to Breckenridge and... I know Utah's prime places. I had a friend who did camp, actually two friends who did a camp in North California, and they transitioned between snowboarding and snow-based sports in the winter while they were there, and then when summer came around, then they did summer camp stuff, so going out on lakes, being out in the woods, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good gig. There's actually a big camp like that up in Pennsylvania called Woodward Camp,
and, which is what you did.
Yeah, I go there often if I can get that together. I like to go up there and get some, I guess you can call it training or having fun on the facilities they have up there. But mm-hmm. One guy in particular, speaking of snowboarding, I guess you'd call him a professional snowboarder, even though he's a BMX rider. He got a gig. He was at Woodward and ended up sending a video into the, Nitro Circus, Travis Pastrana's Nitro Circus.
Mm-hmm.
Just by chance, he figured out that he could do a triple backflip on a snowboard rigged up with wheels instead of on snow.
Find that out just by chance?
Yeah, it just somehow happened, worked out for him. So he's got this snowboard on wheels so he can ride the same ramps that aren't snow, wood ramps. And so now he's in the Boom Boom Huck Jam. He does triple backflips on a snowboard with wheels, and that's all he does. He's a professional snowboard wheel guy.
Dang.
Wheelboard?
He's a wheelboarder.
It's not a skateboard, it's just a
it's
wheelboard.
It's a wheelboard.
Houston is the 7th worst city in the United States for traffic congestion.
Very nice.
According to a company that tracks that, according to ABC News. It literally says that's according to a company that tracks traffic congestion. The company has no name, apparently. That's how they introduced themselves.
They could have just made that up.
No, nobody would do that. It's ABC News. It's reliable.
Did y'all, I don't know if y'all saw this, but ABC recently did a thing last week about a father who recruited his son and daughter to help him rob a series of banks.
Oh, I heard a little bit about this. Don't know the details, but it sounded very exciting.
It was pretty nuts. I'm looking for it. The dad, his name's Scott. He worked at a bank for a while, and of course, in the beginning they hype it up and say stuff like he was just a regular guy. Everybody recalls him as friendly and a nice person and all this kind of stuff. His wife died of cancer and left behind, her kids. He's got a son and a daughter. And the dad just kind of goes off the hinges. He's drinking a fifth of liquor a day. And then eventually he kind of...
It's a good start, at least,
Well, he moved up to cocaine and the harder stuff.
Oh, okay.
And pretty much blew all their savings, or his savings, So he's struggling to make ends meet for him and his kids.
Now he has a habit, most likely.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's got to sustain, so...
If you're doing fifth of liquor every day, you've got something.
I don't know. It sounds pretty organized to me. I mean, you go out by yourself.
Well, it gets worse. So he recruits his son when his son's like 20 years old to do these... help him with a bank robbery. And then he gets his son to convince his daughter to rob the bank with them.
Do we know how old his kids are?
The son's 20 and his daughter's not even graduated high school. So she's
nice.
Like 18.
So they're prime for some crime, They're right in that age, they don't care. They're rebelling against society. They just want to rob that bank. Get the money, man. Get it quick.
I think the daughter was a bit naive to it in a way, but the son, the son was asking his dad, like, are you the devil, like, trying to tempt me? And his dad's like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's what's going on here.
Yeah. So, I mean, the son definitely pretty much knew what was up. He had awareness of it. But the daughter, you could kind of tell she's lacking in life. Like, she doesn't have a lot of people to trust, and, not having her mom around is tough. And, like, she's just in a confusing part of her life. And I think she just kind of got sucked into it. And they kind of played her up as the victim.
So what exactly, what exactly happened? What went down? How did they do this?
The way it worked out is the son and the dad robbed the bank together, and the daughter was the getaway driver because...
She was supposedly not... She wasn't in on it? She didn't know that they were robbing the bank?
In Texas, naive. Which is where this took place, because they were originally from Oregon, and then they moved down to Texas because the dad got a job opportunity. So the story goes. More on that later. But they go down to Texas, and in Texas, if you're driving the getaway car, you are technically just as much to blame as the people robbing the bank themselves, guns and all, demanding the money and all this. So, but she's driving the car, and, you know, the way that they looked at it is, who's going to pull over a blonde 18-year-old girl driving a car? Doesn't look suspicious. So they get her in.
And
on
that,
it.
She might be able to get away with it on the backside. So.
Yeah. So they
tricky.
They get away. They go in. They rob the first bank. And remember, the dad used to work in banks. So he's, you know, when he brings them in on it, he's like, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. All this stuff. And when the son goes in, he said he was so nervous. His hands were shaking so bad that the bank tellers took the money from him and helped him put it in the bag because he was so nervous and just shaken up.
Wow.
Yeah. So they get in the car and they get away. They get back to the apartment and they've got $50,000. And within like a couple, I don't know if it was weeks or months, but in a relatively short amount of time, they spend it on cars and drugs. You know, the dad probably blew a lot on drugs.
Yeah, get a little extra eight ball there.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm sure living conditions, apartments, rents, and stuff like that. Anyway, they blow it pretty quickly. So then it was time to go back to work. So they robbed a second bank several weeks later, which wasn't far from the first bank they robbed. And they pulled a $100,000 payoff.
That's pretty big. Yeah. That's pretty good.
But the daughter's only getting 10%.
Did they work this out beforehand? Is that what?
Mm-hmm. But the daughter doesn't care because, one, she's kind of naive, like I said. And two, she was like, I'd never seen even 10% of what that was in my entire life. So anything that I was getting, I was happy with.
She wanted the money.
Yeah. She was happy. She was, and I mean, she was just the getaway driver. She wasn't doing all the other stuff. But I mean, if she had known that in the state of Texas, she was playing just as big a role, that's when you start negotiating.
The tellers be in on it too, since they helped put the money in the bag?
Yeah, I think we should put them away, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of angry.
I thought you were being serious for that.
No.
I was like, no.
But in Texas, though, they are serious.
Yeah, no kidding. So they planned to do, after they did that one with where they got the 100K, they started getting ballsy with it, and they were saying, you know, well, let's do two heists in one day. So they started doing multiple banks, and they would wear orange road, you know, the people that do road work. Yeah.
Like just the
orange
vests.
Mm-hmm. They would wear the orange vests. Which I don't know why, but that's what they
more official. I don't know.
I guess so. Just to
because you wouldn't think a bank robber would be like bright orange, reflective. Like, look at me.
Well, I know a guy that during the hurricane, during Katrina, you know, travel was pretty restricted right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
He had a work light, this a flashing work light, magnetic. He put on the top of his van, and he was able to get pretty much everywhere with a yellow light, flashing light on top of his van. So there is something to be said for having a slightly official uniform on, if that was indeed the case.
Mm.
Yeah.
They well, it's interesting because those orange vests are exactly what got them caught.
Really?
But it's not in the way you would think. The suits that they were wearing, the law enforcement looked at surveillance videotapes and saw, you know, they saw all these series of the orange vests or whatever, and they saw that they were wrinkled, and something about them being wrinkled connected the idea that, oh, these have been used a lot, and these have These robberies have been going a lot in going on in a central area, so they were able to track the orange vests back to a Home Depot, a local Home Depot, and then find the MasterCard that was used to purchase those very orange vests, which connected it to the dad.
Wow!
So that's how they busted him.
Always iron your clothes.
Be professional.
Yeah.
So, the dad, they bring the dad in, and the dad spills the beans immediately. He's like, okay, I'm going to tell you exactly how we did it. He gets up out of his chair in the interrogation room, goes to the chalkboard, and just opens a marker and just starts drawing, like, all his plans.
This guy knows he's getting a TV show out of this, one
yeah,
way or another.
Exactly. So, he just starts laying it down. He's like, all right, this is what happened. So, let me see. After the first robbery, there was a paper with pictures. They came real close to getting caught a couple times because his mom, the dad's mom, was a person they interviewed a lot in this episode. And she talked about how after the first robbery, they printed a picture of them in the orange jumpsuits from a video camera and put it in the paper, front page paper. And his mom was reading it. And she looked at it and she said, "Scott, if I didn't know better, I'd say this was you." And she said, he grabbed it, grabbed the paper from me real quick and looked at it. She said, I remember him just looking at me and go, "Yeah, you're kind of right." But after this, after they catch them, the dad reveals that he's been doing bank robberies long before he brought the kids in. The reason they moved to Texas was actually because he was robbing banks in Texas.
So he's straight OG. Got it, you know, got his plan down.
That's how he knew how to run it. That's how he knew.
Was on the inside for a while, learned the ins and outs of the banking industry, and then...
Which is also crazy to think about because the fact that he recruited his son and daughter originally because he was out of money. So that is even crazier to think
about.
So
he didn't have enough money to get together a Hollywood-style crew like
couldn't
on Ocean's
Couldn't get George Clooney or Brad Pitt on it.
So he's like, well.
Recruited this high school daughter.
Kids will probably help.
His 20-year-old son. So a total time he had been doing it for about a decade of robbing banks. So that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
That's a lot of money.
Tis.
To not get caught.
It's a lot
for
of money
years.
To blow.
Yeah.
On blow.
How do you blow all that money on blow and like not die or something? I don't know.
There are people that have done it.
Give me $100K. I'll have it. It'll be gone in a week. Promise. Promise.
But yeah, that was pretty much it. And there's more to the story. You know, they kind of dragged it out. You know, ABC did some silly things of like making him look out like super bad guy and just trying to play it up like all this stuff. I didn't really agree with the rest of it.
Trying to increase their ratings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just crazy, crazy story.
Have you seen anything in the news lately about, I guess the government's now coming out. I don't remember what official capacity they were announcing this, but they are now discouraging people from using antibiotics pretty much in across the board now. They're planning on removing it from processing plants where they raise cattle and pigs and other, you know, they douse them up with antibiotics and get them ready to go, so to speak. But apparently that's having a pretty large effect on the bacterial strains that infect humans and cause health problems for us. So there's a real big push right now. In fact, I saw it on the news last night, the mainstream, like ABC or something, where they were informing the public that they should no longer use antibacterial hand soaps, antibacterial, you know, for washing dishes and the stuff you put on your hands to clean, to kill almost every organism that exists on your hands, which is a terrible idea, by the way. But there's been a big, real big push for that in the last few days, and I think in the next month or two, it's really going to blow up, and there's going to be lots of products that come off the shelves and lots of companies that discontinue the use of these products. You heard about anything about that?
No, I haven't. So are these laws that they're going to put in place?
This is actually officials in the government. So, I don't remember. This is, you know, just starting to hear this on the mainstream news the last few days, and most of us have known about this, about antibacterial products being a bad idea for a long time, but it's just now coming around to where if they don't discontinue use of these products, it's going to be a really big impact on humans as a whole, and it opens up the possibility for pandemics and epidemics and things like that. So they're really starting to, it's getting to the point where we have to start doing something about it, because we've been going 50 years using these drugs and creating these super bugs that are extremely resistant to any antibacterial agent we can throw at them because mm-hmm. of use of this type of thing. And it's all throughout our culture. It's spread throughout our culture. people, if you're using Neosporin, it's antibacterial, you shouldn't use that anymore. It's if you're using antibacterial dishwashing soap, they'll be taken off the shelves soon, pretty sure. But in the meantime, you shouldn't be using that. It kills all the good skin flora that you have that you build up over years and years of your life. So it's becoming a big deal all of a sudden right now.
Mm. So you think the argument would be justified? Like if you have like dirty ass hands, you're playing in the mud or something like that, or you picked up some stuff that's obviously gross, I mean, wouldn't it be better to use those products instead?
Absolutely
of
not.
Just
it's a gross factor. It might seem distasteful to you. You might think, oh, I got these germs or this guy's doo-doo or this dog doo-doo on my hands, but it's not going to hurt you in any way. It's not going to lead to you having a cold. It's not going to lead to bad health. It's gross. It's literally just a gross factor that to some extent we have to get over. Putting Purell on your hands every 15 minutes and killing every organism on your hand every 15 minutes is just extremely destructive to your own personal ecosystem, your own, the place where all your bacteria and the flora live on your body. It consists of a large part of who you are is these bacteria and how they live.
Right. I guess I should have said, like, if you did all that stuff, like if you picked up dog poo-poo or something like that, and then you go to, like, eat something, I mean, that will hurt you. So the idea
maybe.
Of being
probably,
on your head.
Probably not.
What? Come on.
Give me a case where that's happened, where someone has come in contact with dog doo-doo, and then all of a sudden they're come down with some disease. I mean, it's not real common. It is gross. I mean, I'm not advocating go stick your hand in some doo-doo and start licking your fingers like you were just coming off a big steak or something. But
so you don't think that would cause your body to, like any of those germs or bacteria would cause your body to react in a negative way that could create a sickness or
bad
health?
That becomes pretty complicated because if you've not come into contact with all this bacteria for your whole life and you've used Purell your whole life, yeah. Then coming into contact with what would be considered a normal array of bacteria can be pretty harmful because you don't have an immunity buildup. You don't have your body has not become accustomed to dealing with the normal environment. So, you know, then you're introduced to these bacteria which would normally be not harmful at all, and not you wouldn't see any effect from them, can then become harmful. Yes.
Hmm.
So it depends on your situation. You know it. What type of bacterial resistance you've built up, what type of flora you have on your body, your natural bacteria that you live with every day, how strong those flora are, because they play a big part in displacing the negative flora, the bacteria that is harmful to you.
Hmm. And you think that the government's going to definitely take a hard stance on it and make it a national thing?
This right now. They're taking a hard stance on it now because it's becoming a national issue. We've enjoyed for the last however many years, 40 or 50 years in this country, if you go to the hospital with a major bacterial infection that would normally kill you, they'll just cure you. It's just that easy. They give you a powerful antibiotic that just cures you. But now we're getting to the point where that just is not happening anymore. When people get the deadliest of the deadly bacteria, they're dying. They're not able to simply just cure it just like that. And that's because of the widespread use of antibiotics in our culture. Very widespread, more than anybody even realizes.
Hmm. So, and you said that they're going to also implement this in like livestock or something like that?
Yeah, livestock is, I don't remember the percentage, but it's a very big percentage, like 80% of the antibiotics that we're talking about that are causing the problem are antibiotics used for raising livestock, cows, chickens, things like that.
So it's things that we're going
to
eat.
Yeah, because they're having to raise these cows pretty much on top of each other. Mm-hmm. So that creates pretty big health hazards, the way they're raising them. They're walking around their own shit, you know, they're next to other cows, that whatever. It creates an environment that breeds these deadly bacteria. They give the cows all these antibiotics to make sure that they, you know, their meat comes to market and they make as much money off of it as possible. But it's turned out that over the years, it's been a very bad thing for building the resistance of these deadly bacteria, which are killing people. They really are killing people.
I want to transition into, going off of that of us consuming animals and livestock and just general health from what we eat in our diet. We talked a little bit on the last podcast about some paleo stuff. You know, I've been doing some research and gearing an experiment towards paleo eating, and all four of us here are pretty, I'd say, you know, health focused individuals. We're always pretty focused on what we're trying to eat and all these kinds of things. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that of paleo stuff, because both of you, probably all three of you, probably have a little bit more experience in paleo related stuff. Brittany, I don't know how much did you do the, have you done paleo stuff with Anthony, like when he did his transition into it? Or
we both did it at the same time for the amount of the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, about 5 months into it, we just kind of, like, waned off of it, just stopped doing it
mm-hmm.
because it was more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But now that he's back from being deployed, we probably will start doing that again.
Yeah. And just a little bit of background on what exactly the paleo argument is you're not supposed to really consume anything that's come from the last 10,000 years as a result of the Neolithic agricultural revolution. And it argues that the human genome has been the same relatively for the last 120,000 years.
Plus,
yeah. And it, you know, those estimates are give or take. It's still a lot of it's in debate, and a lot of it's still being researched. But they also say things that only in the last 10,000 years has agriculture led to grains, legumes, and dairy being produced at a high affordable rate, or not even affordable. Affordability doesn't even have to matter in the factor. It's just the fact that they're there and that our bodies aren't used to processing all those things.
Yeah, the idea is that the idea behind this paleo diet is to take in foods and nutrients that our body has evolved over a significant period of time to take in and take out of those things the nutrients with which we need, and to deal with the toxins that are in the environment that we almost always take in through our food. The idea behind the paleo is to, so say they think, what, civilization goes back 7,000 to 10,000 years is the modern interpretation of it, the most accepted Discovery Channel type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say so.
Lost it.
It's about that. Yeah, that, I've heard similar things. They have said that in the last 10,000 years, evolutionarily speaking, we have become shorter, fatter, and less muscular, and more prone to disease. Whereas our ancestors were more lean, more in shape. They didn't live as long as we did, but they lived pretty healthy lives all the way up until their death.
Yeah, so basically the diet that we've adopted in the last however many thousand years it is, say 7,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way, say we've only been eating grain or the, you know, these more refined products for 7,000 years, our bodies have not had time to evolve to handle the certain toxins and different compounds that these foods contain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty much changing our chemical makeup through all of this technology that we're administering into our food. Like, our technology has literally surpassed our biological makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of the paleo diet is to go revert back to before all of this crap, all of the legumes and wheat and stuff like that, and just eat pretty much meat and vegetables. That's all you need.
Foods that our body...
Protein, vitamins, and minerals.
Exactly. Foods that our bodies have adapted over millions of years to process, and not simply foods that we've invented over the last 7,000, supposedly, years that civilization has existed.
Mm-hmm.
And the grains... the grains that we've evolved, our society has evolved to produce over the last supposedly 7,000 years are
not good for us.
is what.
Not only are they not good for us, the plants actually develop toxins. They develop these toxins specifically to keep animals from eating them.
This is true.
And those toxins, gluten, i.e., are responsible for adverse reactions, especially mental effects, making us more irritable, just making you not want to eat that food.
It's poison.
It's like grains and legumes are known to have a lot of, I don't know if I'm saying right, but phytic acid? Does that sound right? P-H-Y-T-I-C. Which makes it hard for nutrients to be absorbed. There's, you know, a lot of chemical reactions that go on through digestion of those kinds of things that act as counterproductive anti-nutrient properties.
Chronic fatigue, I know that's one of the big things that doing the paleo diet is supposed to get rid of too. It's just like pretty much everybody in the U.S. these days suffers from chronic fatigue. I know I do. That's why everybody's like always drinking energy drinks. And
yeah, 5-hour energies. Remember when those came out?
Yeah, that shit shouldn't even exist.
They
really.
Shouldn't. But we shouldn't have to drink
as
all this
we drink
shit.
Our energy drinks here on the couch.
Well, we drink science. It's better.
Only drink science.
Zero
you must
calories.
Put Bill Nye the Scientist in a blender. One part Bill Nye the Science Guy, one part Carl Sagan, one cup of sugar, if you really, really have to have it.
But yeah, it's like the whole thing with energy drinks and any sort of stimulant, really, it's like it's not solving the problem. It's just treating the symptoms of eating shit food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've got lean meats. You don't want, which is tying in back into what we were talking about earlier about bacteria and antibiotics and hormones that get put into our animals. People beef up our livestock because they want it to be more plentiful. They want a cheaper source of food for them to have.
They want it to mature quickly.
Yes.
Like they want the thing to be born today and be full grown so they can butcher it tomorrow.
Right. Because it's all about production speed.
Yep.
It makes the animal really unhealthy. So then you're eating an unhealthy animal. The animal is slow, it's caged in, doesn't get to move around a lot. It can develop a sickness from that, or just from the foods it's eating could, you know, make it very unhealthy. There, you know, a layer of marble, which is the white, that white spongy stuff that you get with fat on meats, you know, that becomes more more prominent in the cuts of food that you'll get. And, I mean, of course, people will eat it because it tastes delicious, but by no means is good for you. But what also on the opposite end of the spectrum is, like, people need to understand you do need fats. That is a definite requirement of your diet. So a lot of people, like vegetarians or vegans, who will just shun that stuff completely, they could also potentially put themselves in a lot of danger just from not intaking the amount of nutrients they need from fat and saturated fat. You need saturated fat too. And I guess our society's kind of developed this stance against those things, but they contribute greatly to your health.
Yeah.
So to shun them is also an unwise decision. And, you know, I don't necessarily think the paleo diet is the end-all, be-all diet, but I do think it's a very scientific diet. And I think anybody who wants to experiment with their diet, you know, go for it, try it, see what works for you, and just take away what does work and go with it. The paleo diet, I see it as it's a diet that is based on principles of evolution. So for it to be set in stone exactly what you can and can't eat, I don't think that's really something that is going to happen with this kind of thing. I think with more science, it will also evolve with it. So for example, I've heard, like, you can't eat peanuts because they are legumes and they have, which you would think they're like nuts, because nuts and seeds are a big thing too that you can eat. Like almonds are a big thing, sunflower seeds, all that kind of stuff. But peanuts, they can get this mold that grows on them called aflatoxin. And apparently it has to do with the climate, whatever conditions they're in. In transport or just sitting around, so it's really hard to keep it. I think actually the FDA has declared aflatoxins and unavoidable contaminant, so they just don't even regulate it really, because it's just that hard to keep track of. But it's also a big, big problem that paleo enthusiasts discourage. But
peanuts aren't even that good.
Really?
Really?
Well,
I'd rather eat an almond.
You watch your mouth.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They've never been that appealing to me. I mean, when you boil them, that totally changes it. Yeah. But like just peanuts, like you get at the circus or something. Nah.
There was a thing.
That's the most common place you ever eat peanuts.
And I've never even been to a circus.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I've never been to a circus either.
Forget airplanes or like movie theaters. The circus, the standard place.
Like, you know, when you're riding elephants.
I've never seen peanuts at the movie theater. Where are you guys going for this?
You're training elephants and you've got a lot of peanuts on you. You know.
Do they really like peanuts that much?
I think so, yeah. I've seen peanuts being eaten by elephants.
That's
so
racist.
It really is.
Another thing that's not making sense. Drink science.
You asked me to join today, so I did.
I'm always wondering, though, like, about the paleo diet. Like, technology is pretty much part of evolution. Like, if you have a species that has, like, intelligence to the capacity that we do, technology is going to come along. So technology is basically a natural thing. So I'm always thinking, like, okay, we're trying to do this paleo diet where we revert back to what we used to eat, but why not just embrace it and try to evolve to adapt to the new food that's only bad because we're not used to it?
Like, yeah, that's
obviously
what I
think. It would take, like, thousands of years, and it really doesn't make any
sense. But you'd be doing humanity a favor if you kept going with it. Yeah, so that's, I think about that a lot, too.
So I always think, like, you see, like, fat people out and, like, supposedly, like, most people naturally aren't sexually attracted to, like, fat people. So it makes me wonder if, like, that's kind of like an evolutionary thing. Like, people, like, there's a lot of people that can eat, like, all the bullshit food like me and just never get fat because I have a high metabolism or whatever the reason is. So it makes me wonder if, like, people that have a biological makeup where they can eat McDonald's all the time and not get fat, if they're actually on the right track to evolving along with the terrible food we have now. And so basically, you shouldn't reproduce with fat people is basically what I'm getting at. Because, like, those people are, like, very, like, not evolved to handle the, like, all the fat people should be on the paleo diet, but all the skinny people are, like, adapted to eat this terrible McDonald's food. So they actually should be the ones that reproduce so in the future we can all eat McDonald's and live happy, healthy lives. Whereas all the people that are, like, real fat and having these terrible reactions to the bad food just don't breed with those people, and then we'll be on the right track.
That seems like a terribly complicated resolution to the problem of McDonald's when we could just not eat it.
Yeah. Obviously, and that would take out many thousands of years and makes the logistics of that is terrible.
It's already happening to a certain extent. I mean, look at milk, lactose. A lot of Northern Europeans can drink milk, no problem, you know, especially raw milk without too many problems where most everybody else in the world has some lactose intolerance associated with just where they come from and not having milk cows there and drinking milk every day for thousands of years. So it's already happening to an extent. It's it just, how far do you want to go back? What effects do you want personally right now for your body? And if that's to increase cognitive performance, increase your body's performance overall, you know, you want to stick to the foods that that your body has adapted to take in and has adapted to provide the nutrients from that food for your body to function.
I'm loving what you're saying as I down the rest of this energy drink.
They're so good.
They're sugar-free.
Zions with an
zero
X.
Zero calories.
Official energy drink of the UFC. Hey, I didn't see that before.
We can fight.
I
want to
punch
people.
Somebody.
Yeah. Doug, I when we talked last, we talked a little bit about like what your typical day of eating is, and you're doing it pretty well by the book. Can you explain a little bit of what your typical day of a diet?
I've been trying to pull it in over the last few years. You know, trying this dish, that dish. It's always about the ingredients you can get locally as well. Mm-hmm. It's a really big factor. How much money you have to spend on the food you're eating. For example, I'm a poor guy. I don't have much money to spend which is not really a problem. If you're trying to eat healthy and you think it's the money factor is going to be a big problem, go to the grocery store and really look into some of the things I'm talking about. And once you stretch it out, you know, you'll probably end up spending less money.
You really do, because it's a more simplified form of eating. So you don't have to, a lot of people, we have another built up thing from our technology and what we have available to us, is you'll go into a large chain supercenter and you'll say, well, I need my basic things. Then you'll go through and then you'll buy more things because so much more is available to you. And you'll say, oh, I want this and this and this. They're not really needs, they're more desires. So therefore you pick more, when really you could sustain from a choice of five items and just stock up on those five items and it'll save you in the long run.
Just for example, I'll go through a few of the things I eat. Being a poor guy, too, I mean, and these things are something that I find locally here in South Mississippi, which is, from my experience, it's pretty hard to find health food, quote unquote, type items. In the morning, I'll start out with, I've been doing coffee with butter a lot lately. If I'm going to have a day where I'm going to be focused on work, I'm focused on tasks, especially earlier in the day, I'll have the highest quality coffee I can find with an unsalted butter in it. And that sounds weird to a lot of people, but I substitute the butter for the cream because the butter has, it bonds molecularly somehow. I'm not a chemist. I don't know exactly what's going on there. But somehow it bonds with the caffeine molecules and gives it almost like a time release effect. At the same time, providing much-needed fuel to your brain, very specific types of fats to your brain that enable you to think clearly and make good decisions. I'll start with usually that for half the day till about noon. Wake up, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning till about noon. I'll drink this coffee infused with butter. End up drinking about a whole stick of butter before lunch, and then switch to, you know, a big salad, a really, you know, a very big bowl of spinach with some olive oil or maybe some kale or something like that, carrots in for some flavor, and then finish off the day with a good protein hit and some, you know, some more veggies. So maybe like some grass-fed beef or some high-end eggs or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And the butter's grass-fed too, huh?
Yeah, the butter is also grass-fed. It's real important that what we were talking about earlier with the hormones and the antibacterial agents being introduced into the cattle and the chickens, and it's pretty important to go with a grass-fed animal. And it's the same idea as the paleo diet for us. It's what have these cows evolved to eat over millions of years, or at least hundreds of thousands of years, and that's grass. Obviously, a cow eats grass. He walks around in a big pasture, a big field, even before humans, and he eats grass. Mm-hmm. So that's where the cow is going to be healthiest. That's where its body has evolved to be healthiest. So when they eat the grass, they pass down that nutrients to us instead of passing down the, you know, the antibiotics and the hormones that are in.
And the stress of being...
Exactly, yeah. The stress of the animal being
matters.
Unhealthy
it
its
really
whole
does.
Life, yeah.
That's a whole other conversation about energy and stress before an animal dies, and then you eat that, that energy carries over. I'm a firm believer in that. So it's
almost
just
like
better,
a karma type situation?
Yes, it's just better.
Or
karma,
even just a biological thing, really. It doesn't even have to be about karma. Like, that animal is physically stressed, and chemicals, just like we have chemicals that release when we're
producing
stressed.
Producing stress hormones.
Exactly.
Specifically, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That,
and you can tell. You can
makes
too.
Sense.
Go to the grocery
something
store.
Something to consider.
If you have are fortunate enough to have a grocery store that sells grass-fed meat, you know, nearby, go to the grocery store, take a look at that meat. Look at the beef that's grass-fed, and then look at the beef that's corn-fed or you know, factory-raised. Mm-hmm. There's a distinct difference. There's it's a pale pink, you know, it just, in contrast to the healthy grass-fed beef, it doesn't look very healthy. It literally, just looking at it, you can tell that there's something different there, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the, what we were talking about fats and saturated fats, how they've, for a lot of people, have been mislabeled. In reference to butter, a lot of people, I'm seeing more and more research that's suggesting it's a new superfood. Like, it could potentially be, and a lot of people have been saying in the last couple of years, you know, try to avoid butter, butter will kill you, butter will make you fat, and all these kinds of things. But I've also been doing the grass-fed butter thing and just trying to implement that along as well, along with more olive oils and kind of trying to stay clear from vegetable oils, which are usually corn as a base for those kinds of products.
Yeah, you want to stay away from the hydrogenated oils, for sure.
I avoid the corn oils and the vegetable oils, too. Mm-hmm. Even though I think some of them are actually okay, I just don't even use them. I would rather use olive oil, and like when I'm cooking, I'll use bacon grease, because I cook a lot of bacon. Even though it's not grass-fed, it's still better than a corn oil with corn syrup and stuff like that.
And since the butter is a product, a byproduct of the animal, for a lot of people who can't afford grass-fed beef, grass-fed butter is a really good alternative. Or so I've heard.
And even with the downsides someone might see from consuming dairy in general, I don't see the same downsides from butter. Some reason butter tends to stick out. It's unique in the fact that it doesn't cause a lot of problems for people. I'm not sure exactly the chemistry that goes into that, but if you have say you have trouble drinking milk in general or eating anything with cheese in it, try some natural grass-fed butter. You might find that it doesn't have nearly the negative effects of other dairy products.
Mm. Yeah, and I think from what I've seen, butter, especially grass-fed butter. I mean, that's another thing you can look at. You can look at grass-fed butter in comparison to just regular butter and see a difference in color. Like grass-fed butter is like a gold, like bright color because it's more packed with minerals and vitamins that are in it, as opposed to like this kind of wimpy looking pale white, whitish kind of butter.
Yeah, you hear a lot of places, the more color in the food you eat, the better, because you're getting more of those exotic nutrients. And you'll see in the industrial farm-raised meat and vegetables that they have less color, just in general have less color. They're paler, not as full. It's oddly apparent.
Yeah, like some of those fruits that you buy at Walmart, how, like, if you go to buy strawberries most of the time, they're kind of, like, palish color. They're not, like, red and juicy looking. And they don't even taste the same either. And I know it's not an animal, but still, you know that those things, those kind of fruits and vegetables from Walmart do have preservatives and toxins on them.
Stuff especially like the green leafy vegetables such as, like, spinach and kale. That are just big leaves. They have a lot of surface area, which they can spray these pesticides and stuff on, and they tend to absorb it more, and it passes down through the food chain more often. So especially green leafy vegetables, that's something you would tend to want to buy organic.
Yeah, and I usually try to do that with spinach, but kale doesn't happen as often. Makes me wish my kale plants would sprout up like right now, but it's been kind of cold, so but yeah.
On the topic of cultured butter and things like that, Doug, I wanted to ask your opinion on cultured buttermilk.
I don't have any experience with not only cultured buttermilk, I don't have any experience with buttermilk.
I don't think so, but you know,
maybe. I do know that kind of going back to the paleo thing, before all this industrialized food, the things we ate had a culture. They had a bacteria life to them. They had enzymes that our food doesn't have now that's pasteurized or cooked out of it, which is how they get rid of the bacteria and everything that causes problems when they breed these animals on top of each other. But in essence, we need these things to live a healthy life. And what these cultured foods do, like a kombucha, which is a tea with a cultured ginger root. Mm-hmm. That's a very common, probably the most common cultured, it's a cultured beverage you can buy. You get it at any health food store pretty much. Also, and that helps to replenish your gut bacteria, which in today's society, like we've been talking about with the antibiotics, is harder and harder for your body to accumulate the healthy bacteria that help it to be healthy and go on living healthy. And also, that healthy bacteria is what displaces the unhealthy bacteria. So, in essence, you're building up all these little healthy soldiers. You're putting all these healthy soldiers into your body to help combat the unhealthy bacteria and the ones that would seek to take your body over and use it to reproduce in an unhealthy way for themselves.
What's your take on fruits? Because I've heard a lot of people lately suggesting that, you know, everybody says eat your fruits and vegetables, eat plenty of it, but fruits are have a high concentration of sugar in them. So I'm hearing a lot of people suggesting that vegetables are the way to go for your caloric intake and good carbohydrates and all these things, because also you have to consider the fact that a lot of fruits are seasonal, so you wouldn't get them normal, like on a full-time basis, but because of our super centers, because of our technology, we get those things way more, so therefore we eat them way more. And you know, also we're consuming them in the forms of fruit juices, which, I mean, if you think of an orange or an apple, for example, you juice that stuff down and you'd have a pretty small amount of juice that comes out from it, you know, maybe a couple big gulps. But most people will drink like a full 18 ounces or somewhere, like a full large glass of juice, which can spike your glucose level or shoot your insulin way up.
Yeah, fruits, they seem like they're so natural. I mean, they grow on trees. Mm-hmm. So it seems like such a natural thing, especially someone coming off a typical American diet might tend to gravitate towards fruits because they appear to be they are very natural. They've been growing for all this time. But the thing about fruits is they contain a lot of fructose, which is sugar. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing our body, it's not set up to use sugar all the time. And in our modern American diet, that's sugar is for, I don't know what the statistics are, but for an alarming amount of people, over 50% of their diet is from sugar. And fruit is a more natural, you know, form of that sugar. It's not high fructose corn syrup, you know, corn derived things that we've made in a lab, but at the same time, it's not something our body readily handles. You know, it's gonna slow you down. And I'm by no means an expert. I don't know all the expert jargon. You know, I don't know. I can't quote all the experiments these scientists have been coming across. But
is there crazy shit going on behind me? Is that Chris? I think it was Chris and his lady friend.
What was I talking about?
I don't know. Hold on. Let's make introductions here. Say hey to everybody.
Hello hey there.
Everybody.
Hey.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, y'all? Like
your mic. We're like doing a podcast.
I didn't know if I could interrupt, so I was kind of waiting for it after.
We don't give a shit.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's fine.
It's happened before.
You've ruined the entire podcast.
The first time we our third episode, we did it with like the most people. Like everyone was sharing mics. We were sitting down.
Yeah, y'all just come on and join in.
Yeah, grab a chair.
Chris Gillespie and Shuggy have joined us. If you don't know who Shuggy is, her name is Raquel.
More information has entered the circle.
Welcome to being in the credits of the show notes. But no, the third show we did, we were just like sitting around at this big table, and we were all talking, and it was really friggin' hectic at first. Like, everyone was drinking, and it was just loud. People were playing Mario Kart, and rap music was playing, and I was like, all right, obviously, no one here has ever done this before, but pretend it's a radio show, right? So after, like, a while, things got settled down, and, like, we got it really into the flow of talking, and we were all talking, and then all of a sudden, like an hour and a half into it, two guys walk in the door and we all turned to look at him. I think we were talking about Snowden or gun control or education in America and all this stuff. And we turn, we look at him and they look at us. And then we just turn back to each other and we just keep on talking. And the guys were like, and they come and they scoot up and they sit down next to it. And we just like, don't even acknowledge. We just keep talking. And then they like, after a couple minutes, they look at each other and then they scoot up and they're listening to more. And we talk for like a couple more minutes. And within like 10 minutes of them being there, they were like, give me the mic. And then they started talking. And then they had things to say about politics and all this kind of stuff. So then it just became like this six-person podcast.
Supercast.
It was a supercast, a party cast. And it went really well. And by the end of it, by the end of it, they were like, "We need to do this again," and all this stuff. So it works out. It's fun. But so we were just talking about fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, what was the
subject? We're on a paleo rant right now. We're talking about living healthy with diet. But
something I'm well educated on, I guess. With the being in the military, they teach you that. Is there a question? I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing now.
We're just having a conversation. No big deal.
Now that I'm a little bit older and like more mature about it, I guess I still haven't really gotten enough evidence, in my opinion, through my research about the dangers of eating meat. So I do eat meat, only because I have actually looked into it. I mean, I do go to college, where that's a sentiment that everybody tries to throw at you. You know, you go to this little tent and there's like vegan stuff where they show you.
What
is cows getting slaughtered, but...
What do you think the main reason that things go that... Why do you think that people try to eliminate meat from their diet? Are they citing a specific effect that the meat has on their health, or...?
What I see is that, from what the vegan... From what I know and the information I've seen on it, it's... meat isn't really needed in your diet, and in fact, it can be harmful to you. The problem with that is most of the vegans that I know have iron deficiencies as a result.
And vitamin D deficiencies as well. So right. It's pretty hard to come
by. And I feel like there may be a way to get like different types of vegetables in your diet that would make up for that. But I don't think it's developed well enough yet. And I hope it does, because I would switch my diet if that was the case.
I've thought about going vegetarian several times in my life. Something I've heard, you know, from several different people that are, you know, pretty smart guys that take a lot from, is they talked about how when somebody switches to a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet from the typical American diet, they tend to get a really good boost in their health, how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the experts seem to think, the experts that I subscribe to seem to think that that's because they're eliminating all these bad things that come through an American diet with meat that has been processed with antibiotics and hormones,
like Monsanto,
and you know, meat that's simply had a bad life, and that's the reason that you get these negative health effects from meat. And if we started being responsible about our intake of meat and started getting our meat from responsible sources, such as cows, from, you know, that have eaten grass their whole life and just run around all happy being cows.
Genetically engineered.
Exactly. That would solve the problem of the, you know, the red meat problem, or the, you know, don't eat a lot of butter problem.
Yeah. I don't really eat a lot of red. I actually did cut red meat out of my diet, other than like special occasions. Like I went to Vegas recently and had filet mignon. But my diet's in the last 6 months, it's changed drastically for the better. I exercise pretty regularly, not to get big. You know, I don't really
care.
That's
key, right? You feel that?
I just, you know, I run and I do calisthenics just to stay healthy, because I don't want to live in Lipitor for the rest of my life when I'm 50 because I had a heart attack. But my diet's pretty much white meats, like chicken, eggs in the morning. I cook just 2 eggs. And then for lunch, my campus doesn't have anything healthy except for Subway, which isn't really that healthy. But what I do is I just get the wheat bread with tuna. That's it. And that's like the best option you're going to have there. Because the problem with Subway is that they have so much sodium. But the tuna isn't as bad there. So I just eat a tuna sandwich. And then at home, I'll make like a chicken breast. And that's pretty much my diet.
I'm like, add everything.
I don't really see the problem with white meat yet. I do see the problem in the way that they're raised. Like chickens are raised. I mean, they throw them in these little coops. But that's the problem with that, is the way that the American like civilization has like commercialized the meat industry.
I mean, yeah, the flow of money is the big problem in pretty much every area. You got somewhere where somebody can make a buck, and they recognize that they're going to go for it. That's the American way: make as much money as possible as fast as possible. So I mean, that's literally what's been happening.
Another thing why vegetarians become vegetarians is they learn that our intestines are a lot longer than most animals, and the meat actually rots in your intestines before it actually makes its way out of your body.
Which, I don't know if that's necessarily... That's gross to think about. I don't know if that's necessarily a process that's a bad process or not biologically.
Well,
but then again, Doug believes you can put dog poop in your mouth.
Sure. It's nasty, but it won't hurt you.
Sure, that wouldn't give you like E. coli. I mean, that's kind of what's in feces.
Well, E. coli is everywhere. It could give you E. coli.
E. coli is the bacteria that digests your food, and isn't it in feces though?
I'm not an E. coli specialist by any means.
I know, isn't it chickens, raw chickens, E. coli?
That's salmonella. Oh. I mean, it could be E. coli too, but I know the E. coli is like everybody has an E. coli in their stomach, and that's what digests.
Exactly,
like,
and what you're trying to do is avoid a major outbreak of that right. E. coli. Things that could lead into that are perhaps, you know, not having your own stomach flora built up to a point where it can overwhelm these invading E. coli, what have you, whatever bacterium it is invading your body. You have these healthy bacteria to displace that. So, say you're eating dog poop, is what we're talking about. If you've had a healthy stomach flora your whole life from when you were born, you haven't had broad spectrum antibiotics your whole life. You haven't, you know, which a lot of kids that I know, a lot of families I know, at least a couple times a year, their kids get broad spectrum antibiotics to alleviate a common cold or a sniffle.
And it's ridiculous.
It's very, very bad for your body. It eliminates your healthy flora that are in your stomach that are naturally displacing these bad flora. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, if you've had a life of experiencing these good flora and you're heavily populated with good bacteria, there's less space for the bad to get in. So then if you're eating your dog poop, you won't get sick. But if you've, you know, been using Purell on your hands every 5 minutes since you were, you know, 2 years old, I wouldn't eat the dog poop.
Maybe that's why in the documentary Super Size Me, you know, he became so ill, because people can eat McDonald's all the time. I mean, I don't, but maybe because of the fact that he had a really healthy lifestyle before, that was what, you know, caused those detrimental
effects.
Yeah,
his body's like, what the heck are you doing, man?
Although I have seen studies about that whole thing and the fact that the basic math of what he was eating didn't make sense, because he claimed that he was eating 3 meals a day at McDonald's, but the problem is he said it was 5,000 calories a day, and that doesn't add up to what the 3 meals he was eating. Because a Big Mac meal, like the combo meal, like a medium Big Mac meal, costs, I think 1,000 or 1,200 calories for the whole meal. Like, you're counting in soda, fries, and the Big Mac itself.
Again, this is one of the spots where somebody has an opportunity to make money as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, could he have made more money by slightly inflating those figures?
Absolutely.
Probably,
especially
yeah.
when you've already... And I'm a film major, and I understand the way that the production of films work, and I can see what might have happened was he knew that... He had a hypothesis that the McDonald's is, you know, detrimental to your health, and I think it is to a degree.
Maybe a little confirmation
bias. But I think that once
bias.
He started doing it, it wasn't as bad as he thought. So to make a better, more moving documentary, he, you know, stretched the numbers a little bit. Because, I mean, if it had just been like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, I ate McDonald's and now I'm a little bit fatter, that wouldn't have been a very effective, you know, the
yeah.
movement wouldn't have been.
Of course, we don't
good.
Know this at all. I mean, we don't know what that guy was thinking, but... When you bring money into play, it does tend to...
Especially when you've
things.
Already invested in this project, and then now you're actually doing it.
Yeah, why wouldn't you, like, push it and just go with it?
Especially when you got investors, like, leaning on you to make sure that it's a good...
Yeah.
Film. Yeah. Who's going to go behind you and be like, was it really 5,000 calories?
Well, that's the... I was actually reading this yesterday. Like, it was like a Huffington Post, like, did, like, a study on, like, 10 different documentaries that are probably full of shit. That's what I read. That was the only one that I read, though. I wanted to, there was one on Super High Me too, but I don't really. That was more of a comedy.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, it had like his stand up and in the middle of it. I kind of want to do that though.
Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't seen that yet.
It's kind of funny. If you like Doug Benson, he has a new YouTube channel called Getting Doug with High. And basically, the whole show is just him bringing like other comedians in, and he just like smokes them out. And they don't even, it's like the most not like
Love
developed
that.
Show. They just come in and smoke.
I've
and
heard
it.
This too. And at the end of the show, he has a magician come in and do a trick.
And the magician, I don't know. Doug gets excited. Doug Benson gets excited every time this magician comes in. And like the guy's probably like a 18 year old kid. It looks like
about magic tricks.
Yeah. Your mic down.
My headphones or everyone's mic or something.
Hold on a second. Let me see. I don't even know.
Well, Chris has my mic, so it's turned up a little bit because I talk so low. So.
Well, since we're all running through the adapter thing, I don't think I can manipulate your thing. Unless you can.
It's pegging out. Like, definitely, like, when y'all were laughing just now.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if everyone's like that, but the sound was definitely pegging the top of it. Like, it's going to be distorted.
It'll be all right. I can compress it.
Okay.
But yeah, I've heard about that show, and the magician at the end part.
He's a pretty good magician, though. I mean, he's not like David Copperfield, but I mean, he's looks like he's learning, you know, the how to do everything.
Speaking of Doug Benson's documentary, I heard this in recent news that Uruguay, this past Wednesday, has legalized the production and sale of all cannabis.
Where?
Uruguay, okay. South America.
That's cool.
Yeah, the UN's kind of flipping out about it.
Do you know what country is that geographically located?
South America?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in South America. But
I want to say it's on the western but northern half.
It's the southeast. Like Argentina is
okay.
Argentina is like the most southern location, and then it's just above that. So it would be northeast of Argentina.
Nice. That gives me a good visual.
Mm-hmm. Which Argentina, like I would also imagine, anything I imagine in South America, I think of like warm and tropical and great year round.
I think of James Bond movies only.
Exactly. But Argentina is actually pretty close to the Antarctica. You know,
the Bond series, it's an interesting aspect of movies. Ian Fleming really was a misogynist and bad the movies are now. Like the new movies are pretty good. I like Skyfall.
Yeah.
I didn't really like Quantum of Solace too much. But I had to watch, Goldfinger. And I don't know if you've seen like the old Bonds, but they are super misogynist. I mean, it was
of course.
The first scene starts with him. He's kissing this girl, and like a bad guy comes and tries to hit him, and he like moves out of the way and throws the girl.
Yeah,
into it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he like slaps her in the butt. Like,
yeah, there was.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Well, now America's becoming really feminized, and
I like to think
we're
that,
even
I hope
worried
so.
About
the problem
concussions
is we still have
in boxing and stuff. I don't know.
There's a couple Bond movies where he just straight up slaps women.
Yeah.
I think You Only Live Twice. He's like running to get somewhere.
And the woman's happy afterwards. He slaps her and she's happy afterwards.
Well, like this island was about to blow up and like he needed to find something. And like this woman was just like running by and he grabbed her and he's like, "Where's it at?" And she like, before she can even answer, he's just like,
"Do you know why
slap.
They.
Slap. Answer me."
Do you know why they actually started investing in these Bond movies in the 60s?
Why?
It was because the studios wanted to start getting a better market, and the only way to do that was to start getting international markets. That's why all the actors were like from Italy and like different parts of the world.
Oh.
Because before that, Hollywood just kind of kept to itself. But then they started branching out, getting other actors, directors. That way, they can appeal to a foreign audience,
and mm-hmm. a world audience. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the movie that started that whole. Because and you notice it because every scene's like very exotic places and. That was the whole genre of that, you know. Bond is its own genre.
Yeah, the agency MI6 is what? Is it London or somewhere?
I don't actually know where. I would think London.
MI6? Yeah, yeah, I believe there's...
Or British.
It's British, yeah. There's several MIs. The MI5 is equivalent to what our FBI is, adjacent to or just above Scotland Yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's a little different. And then MI6 is supposedly the CIA type. Clandestine.
I have no comment on any clandestine activities in terms of agencies.
They're all crooks.
Have y'all ever read a James Bond book? Because I know there's.
I've never read
books.
Them. I know Ian Fleming, when people started giving him crap about the fact that he was very misogynistic, his answer was, "I just love women." That was his answer to that, which, what a cop out.
But
in
I
the
think
60s,
men are better.
That. You could also, you know, drink scotch and brandy and at work and smoke cigarettes, you know, in your office.
The doctors were, you went to the doctor's office and he's smoking a big old cig to get there. At least that's what the movies say.
They did a recent study. I think this was the same thing on the ABC bank robbery thing that I saw this mixed in somewhere with that. They, scientists studied how many drinks he drinks in a movie, and they figured out that he drank 96 shots of alcohol a week. So it was like James Bond was always drunk. So all of those action scenes you see.
What I like about Skyfall is my favorite Bond, and it's because the characters are more real in terms of they show. What I don't like in any movie, I'll start with this. I don't like in any movie when bad guys just die and then they just die and it was just a thing.
I do. I want them dead, man.
Well, here's the thing, though. I like it. Like the movie Fargo introduced a new concept to filmmaking, and it was, you know, a guy shoots a guy, and the guy may have been a bad guy, but the person that shot him now has, they show the regret and the remorse immediately because no matter what, And I don't like it. The old Bonds did that. The new Bonds, they, when somebody dies, they kind of show him, like, you know, he tries to cover it up. Like the scene in Skyfall where he makes him shoot the glass off the girl's head. And then the other guy just shoots him. They kind of show Bond or Daniel Craig, you know, like kind of.
Damn good show, Scott, waste of scotch.
Yeah, I mean, he says that, but you can definitely, they make it visually seen that he didn't like, you know, that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, when Sean Connery was playing the role, like, he was an alcoholic, but it was, like, you know, joyful. But when Daniel Craig was drinking, it was very, like, you know, like an alcoholic, like he was PTSD. It was very, it's a lot more realistic to what somebody in that profession would probably feel,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just like always living this exotic lifestyle
they're
that everybody's attracted
bringing an
to.
Evolution of, they're bringing the emotions that we know to be true,
right.
In those situations.
And with the original
the
Bond series, it didn't. The problem is that they tied sex with violence, and I don't like that. I used to think that was okay. I didn't really realize it, but when you tie sex with violence, you make violence okay.
Well, they're both edgy. Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it like that, too. I mean,
yeah.
If you're making a movie to sell tickets,
yeah,
sex and violence is where it's at. I mean,
right.
So it's edgy, too. You know, it's all about money. I mean, bringing more dollars.
I'm surprised commercials haven't caught on to that.
Oh, it's coming. But you know that the difference
between
American
filmmaking...
It's coming.
It's definitely coming.
The difference
commercials
between American
are already,
filmmaking...
I've seen a Hardee's commercial the other day where this chick was, like, eating this burger, and it was just super sexual.
Uh-huh. But where was the violence in it?
She was tearing that burger apart.
The burger was dying.
You're tearing me apart.
You know the difference between American filmmaking, or actually the rating system in America and the rating system in Europe, is our rating system, you can get away with pretty much any violence, but you can't get away with sex.
No sex.
Yeah.
Now, in Europe,
no
it's the other way around. They're okay with sexual scenes.
Sex is
but
bad.
They don't like violence.
I'd rather
I
have
wish
sex
we
than
had
violence, because sex is, like, so natural.
Yeah, it's,
and
it's
violence,
a real thing.
Violence is natural, but, like, it's not as accepting to me. Like, I'd rather, like, love somebody than hate someone, but, like, sex is just kind of like, well, I don't know. That's a crazy comparison, I guess.
Fox News, holla.
Sex is sex, but violence, like, hurts people.
Yeah.
Sex hurts, too, I guess.
For instance, the did you know that the film... have you guys seen the movie Boys Don't Cry?
No.
Is it Kimberly Pierce?
I know what
Pierce
you're talking
film?
About, yeah.
It's a true story about a girl, well, a transgender male named
Hilary
Tina Brandon.
Swank
Hilary Swank played
yeah.
it, yep. It's a true... The whole thing was true, and essentially mm-hmm. the plot ends with... She's a transgender male, falls in love with this girl. The girl at first doesn't know. It's a really, like, bad, poor town in, like, Oklahoma, I think. Anyway, the
bumfuck USA somewhere.
When they find out that she's actually a girl, because they think that she's a guy, when they find out, these people kill her. Like, the people that she had been friends with, because they didn't find it natural.
No, I didn't know that part of the movie.
Now, but that's not the point of it. The point is, when they were rating the film, if you get an NC-17 as a filmmaker, you're not making money off of the film.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be
theater, no exhibitionist is going to want to play your movie. So what people fight for is at least an R. Now, when they did the film, there's a really romantic scene in it where Tina, the Brandon character, has sex with the girl and gives her, like, an incredible orgasm. When they rated it, they gave it an NC-17 because of that. But it was a very romantic scene. Now, let's back up to the same time, a movie that came out the same year called Scary Movie that was a rated R. There was a scene where a girl is riding on top of this guy and then a cum blast, like, shoots her into the ceiling. How was that rated R, yet that other, like, Boys Don't Cry was rated NC-17?
Because Boys Don't Cry evoked more emotion, right? I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but that's the thing about it.
You know what
it
I think? Because of the fact that I know that the MPAA is super secretive and they're super conservative, and I'll get into that more. I think that scene made them feel uncomfortable. I think that the idea of a transgender male, you know, making love to a woman and they were happy together didn't make them feel comfortable.
It was more uncomfortable for, you know, the conservative people that are running the show.
Right.
Right.
It's a beautiful film, though. You should definitely watch it. But I did find out, I was watching a documentary recently called This Film Has Not Yet Been Rated. It's on Netflix. You should check it out. But it talks about how the MPAA has two clergymen. That's in the appeals board for it. Two clergymen have to be in the appeals board, and one's Protestant, one's Catholic. I don't like that.
How many? Because
that's what's controlling what we see in this country.
On this appeals board, do you know how many delegates there are?
There's 10 raiders, I think, and they and the whole documentary was to find these people out because the MPAA actually kept them secret.
So two out of 10, there are two that are clergy?
No, no, no. There's 10 raiders, and then on the appeals board, there's and the raiders are just pretty much normal people. The appeals board is nothing but, it's like 12, the two clergymen, and then nothing but like leaders of exhibitionist companies, distributors, and the producers, like really wealthy like film producers and like theater chain owners pretty much.
Yeah, a lot of people easily influenced by the almighty dollar.
Yeah,
for sure.
Pretty much.
And their own, you know, obviously
and
clergy.
The documentary, the whole purpose of the documentary was to expose them because they kept them secret. You know, and that's, it's kind of crappy as a filmmaker to, like, get a rating and then you don't even know who's rating your films. You know?
Yeah, what was that? Eyes Wide Shut had a big problem with
Stanley Kubrick's last film.
They were, you know, they wanted to get into the theaters, but apparently they were initially warned that they were going to have an NC-17 rating.
Because of the orgy scene?
Yeah, it's a big deal. So I don't know if they altered the film or if they were just able to navigate the politics, but eventually
it was aired as R. A lot of times you use ellipses. Whenever, because films used to be censored in the 50s, up until the 50s, and it was pretty much like the end of McCarthyism, which ended that. But we had what was called the production code. And that was literally censored, like censorship of film, because up until, I don't remember the name of the, it was called the Miracle Case, but I can't remember the actual name of the current court case, but it decided finally that films are considered a form of free speech. But until then, they were considered not free speech.
Yeah, I mean, it's artwork. I mean,
yeah, it's artwork.
You can't limit someone's artwork in any way, I don't think.
We can't sit there and say that films aren't a form of a media that informs and educates about our culture, because what most of people's idea of monogamy in America is based off of Disney movies, because that's what they watched as a kid.
And Sandra Bullock movies.
And Sandra Bullock movies.
It's all going to work out in the end, folks.
Yeah.
We promise.
Have y'all seen 12 Years a Slave?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a true story, and it's about a guy, a black man, who was a well-established writer, or I think he was a writer and a musician, and he lived in Washington, D.C., and I think, yeah, slavery was still legal, but he was, like, all set up, super educated, had a wife, had kids, and he meets these two white gentlemen who ask him to go on tour with them as part of their entertainment act and play music for him. So he's like, yeah, sure. So they ride all throughout wherever, do the show, and then on the last night, they get him drunk and sell him off to slavery. And then he gets put into Mississippi, and I forgot who the actors are. Brad Pitt plays like a minor role towards the end, and I forgot the other guy's name, who's like the main slaver. But it just like recounts and shows all the things he dealt with. Like there's one scene where he's got two different masters. This first master that when he gets sold into slavery
is a black man.
What, who?
They got sold into slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the first slaver he gets sold to is, like, a really nice guy and, like, just has him work and is a pretty generous guy as far as slave owners go, I would think. So he's just, like, trying to survive, just trying to live and figure out how he can get in touch with his family, because, like, anytime he mentions that who he is and, like, where he's from, like, they just beat him. And there's a lot of gruesome whipping scenes, and it's just very emotionally gripping and all this kind of stuff. Well, there's one scene where he's working for his first master, and the overseer is a total jerk and just gives him a hard time because he's an educated guy and he's smarter than him and all this stuff. So he goes to like whip him one day because he's drunk and he's just going to beat him just because of it. And the main actor subdues him, takes his own whip and starts hitting him with it. So he goes, he tries to hang him, the slave tries to go to hang him, and there's a scene in the movie where he hangs him, but his feet are touching the ground. And
so
it's
wait,
just,
the slave is hanging who?
No, the slave is getting hung by the overseer. The overseer goes to hang him, and then as he puts him up and like pulls the noose, somebody says, you better make sure it's all right with the master for you to do that, because if it's not, I'm going to make sure you're gone or you're whipped or something like that. So the guy's like, all right. So he just leaves him hanging. He doesn't hang him all the way, but his toes are just barely touching the ground. And it's like a 5-minute scene of just watching him like gurgling and like trying to hold himself up as he slowly spins. And behind him all the other slaves come out the cabin to do their work, and you see them all come out, and they, like, start walking toward him, and then all of a sudden they all just disperse and, like, start going to work, and, like, kids run or playing behind him, because it's just, like...
Saddest scene imaginable, right? Right.
But it's literally, like, a five-minute-long scene where it's just watching him from one fixed angle just, like, choking to death, and, like, all the, like, kids are playing behind him, and, like, everyone else is... Don't even... And, like, a woman runs up to him, like, after a couple minutes and, like, gives him some water and, like, dabs his head and then, like, runs off. But it just follows his whole scene of him trying to, like, get back to his family, basically. And it's a really great movie, but also
hard to see. Incredible time. Could you imagine if we'd lived in those times? What if you're a black man in those times? I mean, just imagine this life you would live.
Yeah.
The life you would lead.
He earns their trust, and they start letting him run errands into town. And in one scene, he tries to run off through the woods. And he's running, and then he just breaks through a bush, and it's just a bunch of white guys standing around, and a black guy with a noose around his neck. And they're like, "Where are you going, boy?" And then he starts freaking out, and he's like, I'm going to town." And then they look, and he's got a badge, and they look at his badge, and they were like, "Best be on your way, then." And as he walks by, he walks past the guy who's got the noose around his neck, and like the camera's following him as he walks by, and right before the guy around the noose is out of shot, you just see him go up, and then I don't know who directed the film, but it's really well done.
It has a big impact, yeah. It sounds like it, man.
Yeah. It's
what's the name of it?
12 Years a Slave. It's a true story.
Wow, that's a pretty big impact, knowing it's a true story.
Because I won't ruin the ending, but the ending is good, too, so.
Is it Sandra Bullock? Does he win in the end?
Well, did she win in Gravity? I don't even know.
She always wins. Oh, okay. It's always a happy ending.
You know who never wins in his movies? Leonardo DiCaprio. He never name one movie where he like had a good ending.
What happened at end of? Oh, we didn't know what happened at end of Inception. Maybe he was crazy.
Maybe was the best.
He could still be in a dream.
That was a good movie.
I'm gonna shut it down in a minute.
Every single movie he's in, though, it ends badly for Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
His girlfriend basically kills him by just letting him freeze in the water. I mean, there was enough room on that door for two people.
You're right. There was a lot of room on that door.
But she didn't want to risk it because she was, you know...
A bitch.
And that way you learn.
Well, guys, I hate to cut it short, but I gotta run. So, but maybe we can get on another one in a few weeks or so. Love to do it again.
I'm definitely more warmed up than I was at the beginning of this podcast. So.
Yeah, well, it's a hard day for all of us. We're all, like, trying to get on top and regulate ourselves. For one reason or another, but
you better regulate.
That's what I'm saying. All right, well, we'll go ahead and wrap that one up. CoastalNoise.com for all the other podcasts. I've got a new blog up, A Geological Odyssey Through Mississippi, an analysis of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, one of my favorite films. Just got done with it this week.
Coen Brothers.
Yes.
And I'm sure I'll be...
Which is funny, because you were just talking about Fargo. And also, they've got a new movie out. I want to promote this, because everything Coen Brothers related is awesome. It's Inside Llewyn Davis, something like that, Llewyn. I don't know, crazy. John Goodman is in it.
He's in everything.
Yeah, I know.
John Goodman.
John Goodman.
Goodman.
That guy's huge.
He's always
huge. With a huge career.
Perpetual sight of him having a big .45 caliber sidearm in his hand from, what is that?
Big Lebowski. That's my favorite Coen Brothers film, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. And No Country for Old Men. Oh, my God. Another Texas film.
It's a great film, yeah.
Incredible. Books are really good, too. If you haven't read No Country for Old Men, highly recommend that one, too. But, yep, I think that about does it. So, goodbye, everyone. Have a lovely day.
Look at my dad driving your car.
Holy shit, I can't believe that. I didn't have the headphones in. I guess you heard her, huh? You could hear her on the headphones doing that.
Huh? Oh, it's awesome. Awesome. I know it's your face.